Hi, it's Sveta and Ben, the world's number one impact investing expert. I have been educating thousands of people on the topic, how can you use finance as a force for good?
And I have been helping hundreds of entrepreneurs all around the world to set up, run, and establish their companies and businesses.
Do you even know what is impact investing? And how can you get engaged in that?
Did you know that in the coming years, we are going to lose 26 trillion of our GDP due to the climate change? But on the other hand, are you also aware of all the opportunities that the sector has to offer?
Are you aware of changing policies and businesses which already impact every little part of your life?
To have the answer to all these questions, come and join us at Swiss Impact with Banerjee's on every Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock Swiss time, starting from 15 January.
We will be interviewing thought leaders, world leaders, policymakers, investors, businesses, which are already engaged in this sector. So, see you on Friday.
See you on Friday.
Hey. Good morning, afternoon, and evening to everyone and to our viewers for Far East. Good night.
Hi, and welcome to everyone also from my side, of course.
We really live in a very surreal world at this moment. We are doing now at this moment a global TV broadcast, but I would love to ask Svetlana what she was doing just before the show.
Do you think our audience really wants to know? Well, household. In general, a lot of household before going to the show and trying to find a babysitter as our was sick today morning. So it was a big chance that I wouldn't be there or Ben, but we managed. So both of us are here and baby's fine walking out in the sun. Exactly. What about you, Ben? What did you before the show?
Oh, you don't want to know. Because today evening we are having guests. So I was cooking before the show.
Everyone, it's an Indian food. So I think you would all would love Ben's food. But unfortunately, guests are restricted to a certain amount at COVID time. So maybe one day you will be also our guest.
Exactly.
So, and I just realized actually today is the 10th episode of the show. So time flies and this is incredible, right? And for those who don't know our show yet, the program was created in order to raise awareness about impact investing, in order to help to convert unconverted ones, the ones who would like to transform and don't know how. So we are also educating people on this topic. And of course, we'd like to inspire you to take an action and incorporate social and environmental impact, not only into your businesses, but into your lives. And Ben, I'm sure you have an amazing story prepared today from around the world. What's going on since last week's show?
Oh, too much, but I'll just keep it limited. So there's one person I know since a quite long time. I had the privilege of knowing him and also admiring him, and that is Vice President Al Gore. So we have met a couple of times, and I know him quite a long time. I remember when he and David Blood founded the Generation Fund somewhere in 2004, people ridiculed, especially the boys from the Wall Street, how do you call it, the Wall Street boys. They ridiculed him, they smiled at his ignorance and lack of common sense to enter the world of money management. And fast forward, 10 years fast forward, in 2015, when they presented their 10-year fund, their performance was far better than most of the hedge funds in the Wall Street. So I guess the guys were not laughing that much anymore. So today it seems the ship is changing. The more news you read, I mean, I'm reading so many articles from around the world, more and more, including in Wall Street, people are getting on to the ship of ESG, impact investment, sustainable financing. So they are all now slowly falling behind him because after all, it's the performance that counts. But we do have to watch out that we don't get, at least in my opinion, we don't get into the same issue that we got in during the subprime. That when something starts very, very good, and what happened, I think most people here are aware of it, but those who are not, it was the mortgage. But then banks started creating a kind of structured product, and they started putting these mortgages as an underlying asset. And many of these were not of the correct quality. They were not properly done in the due diligence. And it started a kind of, the snowball effect, which everybody knows how it ended up. So that's what I hope doesn't happen now, that because suddenly everybody is looking for impact investment. Everybody is looking for ESG, sustainable investment. There are always projects and business owners who will start covering it up with green cover or call their project green, and they will not check the quality or the of what these projects are. And they will start, and of course the banks and the Wall Street guys will jump in, and of course they will start creating structured products, and which will be very opaque and non-transparent. And then we can end up in a kind of that situation. So that is one thing I think we should watch out for in the world of impact investment, ESG, sustainable investment, all that. Secondly, what I wanted to say is that today we live in a globalized world. So that means it is like a little village. It's a global village. So if you invent or you create a sustainable or environmental friendly product or service or business in, for example, say in the deserts of Texas or Arizona or something, where it is a very hot and dry climate, then most likely you can use the same product services in Asia and Africa in regions where you also have hot and dry climate. So and it can also be the other way around. So in my word, my advice will be, please do not waste time in reinventing the wheel. Time is running out. Time is really running out. If many of you must have listened to the speech of Sir Attenborough a couple of weeks back when he spoke at the UN, we are facing a major, in fact, in his language, we are facing the greatest threat mankind has ever faced. So, but technology, innovation is present, in countries like in Europe, US, Nordics, India, Far East, which are really good for the environment, which are really good for the sustainable, which are sustainable. So learn from each other and trade with each other, do business with each other. This is a small world. Go for alternatives and do research before you buy your products. And this is valid for all of us. Please check where you're buying your products. Please, if possible, stop using single-use plastics at supermarket. Stop buying products which are from questionable sources, like from China or something. Pay attention to what you are buying. It is
wow,
really
you are
important.
Asking so much for our audience right away from the beginning. Don't scare them up.
So what I would like to say is, on other side, I noticed that despite today being our 10th episode, people still are getting confused. I was giving a speech 2 days ago.
I say it every single time.
Yeah, exactly. No, but people get confused still between impact investment and philanthropy. I was speaking at an international event 2 days back. It's still confusing because people don't get it. They think either impact investment, the return is at the risk, at the cost of the impact or whatever. So can you please explain in a language which even I can understand, since I'm not a finance guy, or to a simple guys like me, what is the difference between impact investment and philanthropy?
Well, I will try. Actually, this week I had also quite intense engagement. I was giving a lecture 1.5 hour to poor students at the University of Neuchâtel about impact investing, what is what, what is sustainable, what is philanthropy. So with pleasure, I will explain this simple difference, which is indeed not very difficult to understand. So let's go step by step. Philanthropy as impact investments, they both create social and environmental impact. Are you with me so far?
I think so.
Okay, good. But philanthropy doesn't create financial return. So So when you do philanthropy, you're usually also driven by an idea or mission as impact investment, but you usually either donate money and you don't expect your capital back. Very rarely money is returned if you give a loan which is without interest rate, but usually philanthropic capital is a capital which is donated, grants are provided, hospitals are built, schools are built. So philanthropists don't expect the capital to come back. So it's all about social and environmental impact. Compared to impact investment, where besides social and environmental impact, we also generate certain financial return. This financial return can vary. It is not always market return or very low return. It depends on what type of project you're investing, because impact investment projects are not always the same. Some of them are closer to philanthropic projects, then you can expect your capital back and maybe little return, maybe 1, 2, 3, 4%, but still return will be there. If impact investment project is closer to sustainable investments, then usually impact investors are expecting market return, right? So, and this is one of the main differences. The impact investment, it is an investment which generates positive, measurable social and environmental returns compared to philanthropy. Ben, was it clear enough, or do you still have any questions about
that? No, I think it is clear enough. So, but does it mean that by impact investment, I'll lose interest? So I'll get less interest than from normal investment?
Absolutely not. So there was a long discussion, maybe a couple of years back, 5 years back. So people were not sure, is there a trade-off between impact and return? Do I need to give certain amount of return in order to generate impact, yes or no? So what the time shows, what track record of impact investing funds shows, that you can generate both impact and return, and it's also possible to generate market return. And after COVID, we all seen that impact investment also outperform traditional investment. And when you do impact investment properly, you can also diversify your financial risk among impact investment funds or impact investment projects if you invest directly. So it's possible to invest in different asset classes, also in impact investment. If you invest into debt, then of course you generate less return than if you would invest in private equity, but it's possible, right? So it's possible. And I know a lot of family offices which originally just the traditional investment return driven, when they know what is impact investing, they maybe try out, okay, let's do 5% of our portfolio and invest in with impact. But usually they all love that, right? It's also, as a human, it's good for us to know that we do something good also at the same time with our money. And what happens that then they transform whole portfolios into impact investing or partially to sustainable investment, partially to impact investing. But usually they go away from just traditional profit-driven investments.
I think the audience can understand that I'm pulling your leg, because we are quite sure that impact investment has amazing performance, because we even have our own funds, which is performing more than 20% in renewable energy. Svetlana, there's one question. I think it is very much on your table from the audience. Mm-hmm. Asking, my question is, can the same business entrepreneurs, investment growth principle plans in the West world work in Africa, or different principles for different regions?
Just let me quickly read it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you always need to adjust certain things depending on the country, because the culture is different, the region is different, the climate is different. A lot of things, the business may be run a little bit different way, governments are different. So you always need to adjust, but it's really possible to kind of replicate business models once it's created in India. We have, for example, sanitary napkins project, and you could easily replicate it in Africa because the problem is the same. Women's are struggling to have a good product for accessible price, and it is possible to use local raw material in order to produce these sanitary napkins also in Africa. So I would say some adjustments are needed, but it's certainly possible to take existing project and bring it to your country, for example. Ben, what's your opinion on that?
No, I completely agree. Because and if you look at the facts and figures, when since it started, because I have been in this field more than 25 years, impact investment has been, from the West, has been very much focused in the emerging market, which means India, Far East, Africa, and it is spreading like anything. It is growing like anything. I mean, we also are aware of investments now going strongly towards Ghana, sub-Saharan Africa. So yes, your answer is completely correct. It is growing. And of course, the businesses are different, the products are different, but the basis underlying fact remains that it has to be good for the society and or good for this environment. And that is valid whether it's in the West, whether it's in Africa, it doesn't make a difference. That value remains, that definition remains. And that is also one of the things we always teach at our course, because I think Svetlana forgot to mention, we have we train businesses from all over the world, entrepreneurs, on this, about what is impact investment, how to do it, and how to implement that in your existing business. For example, if you already have an existing business, how to implement that. But for that, I think Svetlana can tell you more.
Have a slide today on education.
Oh, we can ask to show the slide.
Yeah, and I mean, usually it's also, of course, for everyone who is looking for various types of resources, not only financial, but also expertise. And usually when we ask projects, when do you need the money? The answer is yesterday. So everyone is looking for funds. And the great thing is there are enough funds out there. A lot of financial institutions, governance are allocating trillions into impact investing sectors. So you can get this money if you do your fundraising and investment strategy properly. And this is also what we teach. We teach how to pitch your project. We teach how to create a stable and a good financial plan. So it can be long-term big success as well. And of course, we also teach businesses how to incorporate social and environmental impact into their business. This is the key. This is the core. We don't work only for profit. We never did, I think. So, but now it's really, really strong. Yeah. And we believe this is the way for the future.
And jumping in here, when we speak about making a pitch, Svetlana, tell us who our guest is today, because that would be extremely interesting for people who are looking to make a pitch or thinking about writing their pitch for investors.
Absolutely.
How to do it.
Yes. Exactly. So today's guest is Kevin Harrington. And for those who don't know, I will quickly now introduce him. So prepare your questions already, because I'm sure there will be many. If you are quick enough, we will take your question to Kevin. So start writing the questions in the chat. Okay, so Kevin Harrington is the original shark on the hit TV show Shark Tank. And he is the creator of infomercial pioneer of the As Seen on TV brand and co-founding board member of the entrepreneurs organization, Kevin Harrington. He has pushed all the questions and excuses to repeatedly enjoy hundreds times success, as they say. So he is a legend, and he could produce more than $5 billion in global assets, a business venture. I mean, so he produced so many business ventures, but the total it would be $5 billion or more of in global assets. He launched more than 500 products, and he is making dozens of millionaires. So if it's your dream, okay, maybe this is your call to action. Yeah. He also not only going for profit, you know, because many people might say, oh, he is such an aggressive investor, but not. I would say he is empowering entrepreneurs to their greatness. If I quote him, he says that, I believe every entrepreneur deserves the opportunity to see his or her dream become reality, right? And here today, we are going to challenge him a little bit on social and environmental impact and see how he's engaging or maybe wants to engage in impact investing sector. So I don't know, Kevin is not yet here.
No, we will have him in 10 minutes. It's still 10 minutes to go. So yeah, so tell me more about then impact investment and investment. So investors, what kind of investors, in your opinion, are mm-hmm. moving into this field? Or shall I answer to this my own question?
Yeah, you can answer it. Just wait a second.
That would be boring if I ask my own question and answer. So when we started 25 years ago, at least when I started, in my opinion, my experience, most of the investors into this field were either who moved over from philanthropy to investment, or they were quite major families, old European families who are very financially strong, who put a part of their assets, or who said that the interest of our underlying all assets, whatever we are earning every year, a part of that earning goes into investment, which is good for the society or good for the environment. That is how it initially started. And I think the term, Svetlana, was created by Rockefeller, no? Rockefeller created this term
in 2007.
Yeah, they created the term impact investment. But the thing existed quite a long time. On the other hand, there are businesses which in today's world, in today's definition, are called impact investment, already existed from a long, long time. In Netherlands, where I grew up and where I come from, it's... you have companies like, what's it called, Max Havelaar. It's a coffee company which always did fair trade. There were a lot of fair trade companies and things like that. So in today's definition, they are impactful businesses. So they already existed. But the term came into being, like Svetlana just mentioned, in 2007. And then it started kind of snowballing. And today, all the banks, I think Sir Ronald Cohen from England, he even brought the public money or the combination of public and private together. So these are the kind of, and that was, I think, a major, major step. Because Svetlana, I think you were one of the points you mentioned earlier that he used the dormant accounts into...
Yes, yeah.
Can you explain that?
Yes, absolutely. So dormant accounts... It's not an account which are just sleeping, right? It's a definition in banking sector. So it's accounts which were when the money was not claimed for very long time, right? So the bank have certain policy. If someone doesn't claim money for, it depends on the bank, 100 years, then they might do something with that money. It depends on the bank policy. But in many countries which are financially strong, like UK, Switzerland, in Singapore, and so on. The banks have a lot of dormant accounts. And what's happened in UK, for example, they decided to instruct the banks to transfer certain amount of dormant accounts into impact investing fund, which UK banks did, right? So they, I think, get around 900 million pounds in order to invest with impact, which is amazing. You know, this money is maybe never ever is going to be claimed, and it's just lying as a dead asset on the bank accounts. Instead, now it is helping to solve social and environmental challenges. Switzerland could do the same.
Exactly. So we
Not
are going to be a stand for it.
Yeah. European countries could do the same.
Oh, I just heard that there is a short video to introduce our guest. Maybe we can play the video now.
Of course, yes. That was indeed very short.
That was quite short.
Maybe then I can say a bit more.
Yeah.
So if you one day have a chance to pitch to Kevin, it is tough, and you should do a very well research on whom you are going to pitch it. It's not only for Kevin, it's for any investor you are going to hunt. Do your research. What are the values of the investor? What is he looking for, right? So to see that your project or company is actually going to be a match for this particular person or impact investing fund. If I speak about Kevin, he is very tough, very active. For him, for example, it's very important also that if you pitch your project and financial plan, then you must allocate a sufficient amount of money into marketing. And this is valid for any project in impact investing or not in impact investing. Also in impact investing, we teach them to allocate enough capital for marketing, because still, if it's a product or service, you need the world to know about it. If you just create something great, but nobody will know, you just keep it very small, it's very difficult to scale it up. So marketing is very important here. Ben, you have anything to add from your side?
No, I think that is completely the point. And that's exactly also, remember what we teach to our students. Exactly the step-by-step how to make our the pitch for the investors. What are the points where you have to pay attention to? What are the points the investors are looking for? And like you mentioned, it is extremely important to do upfront research of the investor. What are his values? I mean, there are so many amazing investors out here, and also more and more financial institutions are coming with funds. They're making it available for impact investment. But they all have their own criteria. They all have their own values. Some who are paying attention, for example, if you look at the European Investment Bank, they are very much focused on technologies and innovation for climate change, related to climate change. If you look at the Faith Invest, the funds coming from a lot of religious institutions, that is very much on forestry, forest protection. So there are so many different criteria, different focuses the different funds have. So I think that's very, very important to do research upfront, because otherwise, if you send just a general teaser, the investor also doesn't think, or it doesn't feel that you paid attention to his points. So it's very important that if you want to get his attention, speak his language, speak to what interests him. So, I mean, I can give example. One of the projects we had done, supported long time back, is the African Park project. It's a major project which takes care of the forest and the animals in Africa. It's an amazing project. But if you come with the African Park project, which is taking care of the indigenous, it's taking care of the natives and the wildlife and protecting it all from poachers and all that. If you come to an investor who is into climate change, maybe it's not his cup of tea. So it is really important to pay
maybe
attention.
Not yet.
Exactly, not
you
yet.
You will ask him if it's his cup of tea or not yet.
Yeah, but generally the investors, if you do a little bit of research on them, you will find out that they already have it somewhere mentioned, that this is what their focus is, or on their speech, or in their article, website, whatever, that this is their focus. So please, please, please pay attention to that. And another point, which just a tip from our course, is that focus on a problem. Always focus on a problem. So when you give an investment pitch, say that this is the problem we have and this is my solution. And that is extremely important, because the whole pitch should be based, because often people put a pitch based on opportunity. But what attracts the investors more, or what has more effect on the investors, that has been proven by studies, is that it is more effective when you focus on a problem. So you say, this is the problem we have, and this is a solution.
And not just a problem, big, juicy problem.
Yeah, the bigger, the better. So, and say that this is my solution, this is my service, or this is my product with which we can create a solution to this problem, or we can do something about this problem. So these are many of these points which we teach in our course. So, oh.
Okay, I think Kevin has joined us.
Our guest has arrived. So let's welcome Kevin Harrington to the program.
Kevin, we are waiting for you. Hi, 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 Kevin. Welcome to Swiss Impact with Banerjees. Yes.
Yes, okay. Perfectly.
Nice to see you guys. All right.
Same here. Everyone is waiting for you. High five. Yes.
All righty. Hey, I've been just checking everything out. You guys are looking good. How's everything going so far today?
Very good.
Everything is amazing. You know, we did household, we did some preparation for our educational program. This week I was teaching at the university. So like everything is rolling in impact investing.
Exactly. Good.
Very good. Well, looking forward to hanging out with you a little bit here today and see if I can help bring a little, bring some great ideas and energy to the table here to help entrepreneurs and folks that are out there around the world. Do we have folks from across Europe, Zurich, and
it's Switzerland, Europe, et cetera? Europe, Asia, Far East, Americas, Central
Africa.
America. So it's 122 countries. So
beautiful. Fantastic.
Exactly.
Yes. I only speak one language, though. So,
which is one of the most spoken. So I think it will be fine.
Exactly.
Okay. So, very good.
So Svetlana made the whole program. She made the expectation of all the audience for you, and she said we are going to make it very tough. We are going to ask tough questions.
Oh, okay.
Kevin, would you just maybe tell a bit of your background yourself? You know, we know you are such amazing entrepreneur of entrepreneurs, but what people don't know about you, how would you talk about yourself?
Okay. Well, thank you so much. Let's get started. So I'll do a quick story. I grew up in Cincinnati, Ohio, which is not a big city. It was, you know, sort of a blue collar area. And my father was a bartender. I'm one of six kids. So I didn't come into the world in any kind of money situation. But when I was 11 years old, my dad said, hey, I've saved up enough money that I'm going to open up my own bar. So he opened Harrington's Irish Pub when I was 11 years old. And for several years as a young teenager, I was working in the restaurant business. But now this goes back because, I'm an old entrepreneur now. So this was actually back in the 60s and the 70s when I was doing this. And I'll never forget, I was working 40 hours a week as a young boy, and I was making $1 an hour. And
wow.
I said to my dad, there's not a lot of money here. Okay. So start your own business. Okay. So he mentored me. My father was my first mentor. Mm-hmm. I started a business in high school. Then my freshman year of college, I started a heating and air conditioning installation company, installing furnaces, air conditioning systems, et cetera. I had by my sophomore year, 1 year in business, we were doing $5 million a year in sales. We had 25 employees, six trucks going out every day while I was in college. And wow. I realized, wait a minute, I can't do both. So I actually dropped out of college. So I'm not proud to say that I'm a college dropout. My mom was very upset, but I think it's turned out okay.
She's happy now, no?
So then one day I'm watching cable television, and when I first ordered cable TV, this is 38 years ago, there was only 30 channels. And as
I thought you were just 40 years old, Kevin.
Oh, hey, I am an old entrepreneur. I'll give you my age. I'm going to be 65 in a few months. Okay.
So, really? So
I was around back in the day. But I'm watching the 30 channels, and I got to the last channel, and everything else had programming. ESPN had sports, and CNN had news, and MTV had music. Last channel was Discovery Channel. Nothing was running. And so I called the cable company and said, hey, I'm not getting anything on channel 30. And they said, oh, channel 30 is a brand new channel called Discovery. They don't have a budget for 24 hours a day. It's only an 18 hour a day channel. So I said, wait, 18 hours. What are you doing for the other 6 hours? They said, nothing. It's just going to be bars on the screen. And that's when the light bulb went off. So I said, I am going to fill that time with something. And that's what I did. So I started giving, I started putting product shows together. And this is, these were, we didn't call them infomercials, but this is almost 40 years ago, but they were these infomercial shows, 30 minutes of selling products, juicers, mixers, blenders, woks, fitness products, Tony Little, Jack LaLanne and the Juicer, George Foreman, big projects. And these things were taking off like I had never seen sales, hundreds of millions, then billions. And so
so you supplied the whole America with that, right? With the technology so they can press juices.
Yes. We, you know, and so the big breakthrough for me then was, and this is why it became global. I was sitting, and so I'd been doing all of this that I just described from the early 80s to the end of the 80s. But I was sitting in 1990, I had a library of over 100 plus infomercials in all different categories, but a lot of housewares, hardware, DIY, fitness products, things that consumers want. And I said to myself, where else can I run these? Because I've invested in the infomercials, in the inventory, in the product manufacturing, the tooling, etc. I said, we've only run these in the United States. So I did an exploration. I went to London and I started attending various international television conferences like MIPCOM and the Cannes Film Festival down in France. And all of a sudden, I started meeting television networks all over the world. We did a deal with Rupert Murdoch on Sky Channel. We did a deal with the Kinnevik family in Sweden. We did a deal with the Marcucci family in Italy. And this is back in the early 90s now. And what was I doing? Licensing my shows around the world. So we would take Tony Little, dub him into dozens of languages, Dutch, German, English. And in fact, we were the guys back in the early days. We put one video signal out to all of Europe. We would be up on Astra satellite. Yeah. But you could watch our shows in German and Germany, in Dutch, in Amsterdam, and you know, in the local language. So this is what we started doing in 1990. We have one video signal, 8 audio tracks, so that the local people, the local markets could pull down the voice track of their country. And and so we had fulfillment centers and customer service centers set up around the world. This company went public on the New York Stock Exchange, and we stock went from $1 a share to $20 a share. And then, of course, then I got the phone call from Mark Burnett to be a shark on Shark Tank. And so I've had a lot of fun doing all this. I've worked with amazing celebrities. 20 of my companies were over $100 million each. And as a shark, now here we are in season 12 of Shark Tank. I've done 175 plus segments. And one of the cool things about Shark Tank now, like I was in Mexico last March with the sharks from Mexico, and we were taking pitches. And we went out in Israel with the sharks from Israel, because Shark Tank has local sharks in a lot of local markets, Australian sharks, Israeli sharks, South African sharks, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a global brand, and I'm excited to be here today to hang out with you and talk a little business and entrepreneurship. So that's my quick little story. It took a little longer than I thought, but thanks for asking.
No, that's so inspiring. You know, thanks a lot for sharing. It's like the success, you know, that many people want, and it's like here it's possible, right?
And college dropout. I think Steve Jobs, they were all college dropouts. So basically, I think that should become the thing that you, if you want to be successful, you have to be a college dropout.
Well, it worked for me now, you know, I have 2 boys. One graduated from Penn State with honors, and the other decided he didn't want to go to college, and he tried it for a bit and it didn't work out. And so he's you know, working in one of the businesses that my son and I have. So together, but yeah, it's, I went my schooling when I went to University of Cincinnati in Ohio. Mm-hmm. I had one class had 800 kids in it, and I just didn't feel I was getting a great education, and I was missing out on things at work. So I had to get back to the office many days where I just couldn't even afford the time to go to school.
Exactly. I mean, I know Ohio a little bit, and there the economy had gone down, but now it is again climbing up so fast. It's amazing how that, especially in the real estate sector, it's amazing how it's developing.
It is amazing. Yes, things are taking off. I mean, real estate is. I mean, I think one of the reasons COVID really did a big number on a lot of people. I remember a year ago in March when the lockdown kind of took place. For weeks, people didn't know what to do. They kind of just put their head in the sand almost. Some people for months, and so. The good news is that as an entrepreneur, I said, I have to figure out where do we go? What is the pivot? What do we need to do here? Yeah. And so for a year, I've been dealing with a lot of these pivots, and we've figured out quite a few things that have kept a lot of our businesses, not just surviving, but we've had some that have just taken off.
Exactly.
Really good. It's
so important to change, you know, and because people sometimes think nothing will change or they're so inflexible to adapt. But it's a key in business, especially nowadays. You know, before I think it was the average life of a business like 25, 30 years. Now it's 5 years. And if you don't adapt and or constantly working on your product, then the companies are dying. Right?
Exactly.
I have a first question. Actually, you kind of explained, we now understand why you were called the entrepreneurs of entrepreneurs. You've been in all industries around there. But how did this awesome title came to you, Entrepreneur Answers Men?
Well, so thank you for the question. And when I started this amazing As Seen on TV business, I owned As Seen on TV, Inc., asseenontv.com. Mm-hmm. This is a brand that the world knows, right? I owned all of that. And we were, so in the beginning, I started in housewares because that was very demonstrable.
Yeah.
And people, everyone, whether you had a home that you owned or you rented in an apartment, you still needed tools in the kitchen and around the house and things like that. So it was a mass market product. So I started in the kitchen categories and housewares, but soon after, people would approach me. And I'll never forget the first time Tony Little called me and he said, Kevin, Tony Little's the fitness guy, right? Mm-hmm. And Tony Little said, Kevin, like, I'm watching all these shows that you're doing in housewares. I have these fitness products that people lose weight. They feel better. What? Let's try it. I said, Tony, I don't know much about fitness in the product space, but let's give it a try. And we started with ab products, get better looking abs. Yeah. And what we were selling though was magical transformation. And so go from this, overweight and out of shape to perfect weight and great shape. And so I started learning that magical transformation works in every industry. It works in beauty because if you have acne and you want to get rid of the acne, there's products that you can buy that will magically transform your face. So beauty, fitness, even in the kitchen and the DIY. I mean, DIY, you're fixing things around the house. From broken to fixed. So I started getting into every single industry out there. People called me and said, can you do golf? I said, what's the magical transformation?
Yes, I can.
You're going to get a better score. Save 8 strokes on your game. I'm like, hey, I want to know about that. Right? So we did the first golf infomercial, the Medicus Golf Club. That hint, it's a hinge that has to fly. We did golf, we did fitness, we did beauty, we did housewares, we did DIY. So ultimately, we were in every single category direct to the consumer that you could think of. And today, even more, like the PPE categories, personal protection, sanitizers, wipes, et cetera, right? Air cleaners. I think at Entrepreneur Magazine was seeing all of this and they said, you're the entrepreneur's entrepreneur because you're dealing in so many categories that this is powerful. But also, I started the Entrepreneurs Organization, EO. I'm one of the co-founders of EO. It started in 1987. I got a group of entrepreneurs together, one of them, Michael Dell from Dell Computers, and some other very high profile guys. We put some money into the bank account and said, we want to help entrepreneurs grow. And when you joined EO, you got a team of mentors to help you with your business. And so that really has been my last direction in life here is helping mentor businesses. Let me say it this way. I spent the first 30 years of my life trying to figure out what I wanted to do, right? And when I was 27 is when I found this world, the world of infomercials. And I said, this is an industry I want to be in. So from there, I call it the next 30 years of my life. I spent building businesses in, you know, building product businesses, having success, public companies, billions of dollars in sales. And now I'm in, I call it the last 30 years of my life. Maybe I'll live past 90, who knows? But my dad was 93 years old when he passed away, God bless him. So, but I say the last years of my life, which is now that I'm older than 60 and I talk about my next 30 years, it is to mentor folks and entrepreneurs. And this is why one of my latest book, Mentor to Millions. Has been, you know, sort of a new direction. So I love entrepreneurship. I love helping entrepreneurs. I love coaching and mentoring. And this is where I plan to spend many years helping.
When I hear that and your energy, you know, I'm sure there will be maybe not 30, but 60 years ahead.
Exactly.
So we need to win you for impact investing. Yes, we need to win you for impact investing and that you could mentor each SDG, you know, sustainable development goals, accessible education, accessible healthcare, action for climate change, action for our oceans, and so on. You know, that would be fantastic if we could win you. Yeah, Ben, what do you think?
That's what I am completely. So because we also know that previously also you had mentioned you're very much interested in impact investment or impact businesses which are making a difference. Businesses which are really doing a very good for the society, environment, and everything. And most of them, or many of them, are outperforming the market. And especially with the COVID and everything, they're doing amazingly good. If you compare them related to the old-fashioned traditional businesses, like the fossil fuel-based businesses, all that. So are you also slowly venturing into that sector?
I mean, as an entrepreneur and a shark, you know, I receive over 100 pitches a week that come in through various portals, right? I mean, like I've already been on two, you know, it's 10:49 a.m. my time in the morning here in Florida. I've already been on 2-hour-long Zoom calls prior to now. And by the end of today, I'll have probably 8 Zoom calls talking to entrepreneurs and doing things like this. And so what happens after we finish a session like this, I'll be getting emails and calls. So as I see, you know, hundreds of deals a month, we are seeing more things happening in this impact world. And this is because, look, the world is changing. And a lot of people before COVID, it was too much about me, selfish, selfish business owners, entrepreneurs. And I think that we now see that we need to be able to collaborate. And I think this is a powerful word that happened for me. As soon as COVID hit, everybody was running and not knowing what to do. But my initial reaction was reaching out, talking to those that are in need.
and let's collaborate and let's communicate, and let's get out there. And I think this is what has spurred impact kinds of momentum, because you have to think about your fellow man. You have to be looking out for the universe, protect those that are going to be living in years to come. And so I believe that this is one of the responsibilities we have as humans and as entrepreneurs, to focus in sustainable, impactful ways.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where I would like to step in, because I know that this COVID has devastated a lot of small and medium businesses all over, even in America. I'm hearing in New York, a lot of small restaurants, cafes, they're all completely bankrupt. So what would be your advice to such business owners who are completely now reeling under the shock?
Good. So let me explain a couple of dynamics of what happened when COVID first hit. So you think that COVID hit and you're thinking, what is going to happen? How do I operate? How do I get go forward? So, but this is what physically happened. Businesses shut down. People were laid off. In the United States, it was 50 million people had no place to go every day. What did they do? Yep. They stayed home. What did they do at home? They watched television. They went on their computer. So you had this massive increase of viewerships for television and the internet. And then you had this tremendous decline in advertising, because if your business is closed, you're not spending money to tell people to come see you, right? Concerts were closed. Restaurants were closed. Yep. So you have no advertising, massive increase in viewership. What did I do? I didn't stick my head in the sand. I went after customer acquisition. I increased my e-com efforts by 10, because I said, and I started seeing people in my industry, all of a sudden they took and ramped up their customer acquisition. And I say, what is your customer acquisition cost? Your CAC. CAC. We call it a CAC in the United States. Okay. What is your customer acquisition cost? I know it's funny. It's just little terms we use.
So, I know this one. Yeah. We also use it.
Yeah. So I said to myself, I had a product that was running $18 to acquire a customer for a $30 item, which was a little high, but we were okay with that. But once COVID hit, we sped it up. We got that down to $5 customer acquisition. We've never seen numbers like this in years. So I think the key thing, the companies that have been devastated, the challenge was that if you had a retail store, you're going to be devastated, right?
Yeah. I mean, or restaurants, cafes.
An example of something we did. This is one of my companies, and it's a company called Celsius. And this is an energy drink kind of a product. Now, prior to COVID, this product was in the United States was the number 9 energy drink in the United States market, behind Red Bull and Monster. Mm-hmm. This is prior to COVID. Now, COVID hits. And what happens? All the stores that were carrying Celsius were closed. Yep. So now you think sales are going to plummet. But guess what? They skyrocketed. Why? Because we didn't focus on the retail side. We focused on the direct to the consumer side, the e-com side. What did we do? We put thousands of Instagram influencers out there using the product, telling their friends and family and followers to go get Celsius on Amazon. Our business on Amazon increased to over $20 million in annual sales. And this was during COVID. And what happened to the company, the stock was $6 a share. It went to $46 a share during COVID. It went to $3 billion. So what I'm saying is that, again, we didn't sit, we engaged, we energized e-com and focusing on customer acquisition. One other thing that I'm going to give you an example on, for example, I spoke to the cigar industry, okay? And I smoke cigars, and I have for many years.
Me too, once in a while.
I did smoke when I was a student.
Okay. Cigars are tough, but I smoke one a day at least now, and because I'm home more often. But so I'm talking to these cigar owners. There was about 800 cigar store owners in the audience, and one side of the room was complaining that those internet marketers are stealing my customers. And the other side of the room was the internet marketers stealing their customers, okay? And so I said, what am I missing here? You need to focus on subscription revenues. Getting, you know, like I buy, you know, the funny thing is I get the same box of cigars every month when I go to my cigar store. Why don't they sign me up to ship it to me every month? Why? Because they haven't thought about it, right? But yeah. Subscription service, subscription revenue. Yeah. And so like cigar stores, what should they be doing? I said, I went down to the cigar place I go to, and I said to him, I said, look, why do you just wait for people to walk in? Why don't you have cigar rollers in here? Why don't you have events? Why don't you have whiskey tastings? Why don't you have cigar tastings? And now all of a sudden I'm getting all these emails from my cigar store guy saying, come on down. So you have to engage. If you're a retailer, you need experiential type activities because yeah. People are moving more towards subscription revenue direct from the, you know, and you know, like Amazon is huge here. But they, you know, buying online, but they also want to go in and enjoy. So you need to modify your business plan and go for these experiential kinds of activities.
Wow. Thanks for sharing, Kevin. I have a question for you. So how do you actually select these hundreds of projects which you receive each week? How do you find maybe one or five out of which you will talk at all? So how do you select them? What are your criteria? What are you looking at?
Yeah, I mean, so that's a very good question. It's kind of like, you know, how do we evaluate? So, I mean, look, in the earlier days of my life as an investor, I had to get involved in things that were more startup oriented because people didn't need me if they were successful and they're in the market selling already, right? You know, hey, we've already built our business. We don't need you. And that's fine. I could have helped them maybe, but when they're a startup and they don't know what to do, that's, you know, I was getting involved there, but and so I took 20 startups to over $100 million each. And so I've got that track record of being able to do that. But now I like to focus on things that already have a proof of concept. They're already a little bit along. They've already maybe figured out how to acquire customers, but now we can, let's 10X that, right? Maybe they need capital. So I'm going to go help them raise capital. But also maybe they need a sustainable, impactful part of their business also, because like we all know, there's investors that are looking for sustainable and impactful businesses. So if you're not embracing that, maybe you're not going to get the investors that you need. Okay. So I think this is why it's important to understand the different aspects that are out there. But the bottom line is I have some folks that help me. I can't physically handle over 100 a week. So I have a team. I've got a 32-year-old son, my son, Brian Harrington, and he's got a team of people. And then they bring me in, like maybe out of the 100 that come in, I'll focus on the top 10. And now we start diving deep from there. So I think the key thing is I want to spend my time on businesses that have the greatest upside, but that are also thinking about the world and the impact of the sustainability also.
Absolutely. And what about, I mean, you have 20 businesses, right? You said, are you thinking about incorporating social and environmental impacts? Maybe you're already doing it, or are you thinking about doing it so that also existing businesses which you have are considering our planet and people around and create positive impact with the existing businesses? Because as they are huge already, you can create enormous impact around you.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, this is one of the keys to putting together I'll step back. So when I look at an opportunity or a business, I often want to see like a business plan. Okay. Not everybody has a business plan, but if they don't, I like to see a little, at least executive summary, mini plan or something. Yeah. And so when I'm looking at a business plan, I like to see that the company is also incorporating the sustainability into their plans. And so, I have, I'm involved with a lot of nonprofits, and nonprofits are all about, taking care of, the rest of the world and other people. And so I've actually formed a partnership with a couple of very powerful nonprofit folks that, a gentleman that's been in the business of helping children, and being very impactful. He has thousands of children in its children's home that he helps thousands of kids on a monthly basis. And so we're looking to scale this in a big way. But, I think the bottom line is that as an investor, I look for something that is unique in the market and unique enough such that there's no other business, product, or service that is solving the same problem in a similar fashion. So when you can add impact into your business, this can give you some unique aspects over your competitors, right? And I think that's the key. So in other words, if I'm looking at investing in a company and I see here's a company that does this and here's another company that does some of the same things, but they're doing a lot of impactful things also, it's very clear which way I'm going to go. I'm going to invest where there's impact. So this gives you the added edge, the added advantage, and the unique positioning in the market.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking. Because if you look at how the risks are rising, and also with this mandatory reporting and liabilities coming into the market slowly, because all the regulations and policies, they all want more and more reporting from the governments, or sorry, from the businesses and companies. Even Wall Street is now moving into this sector. They are also asking for reporting.
By the way, Kevin, how Wall Street is now putting a new slogan instead, greed is good, they put green is good. Green. And they change the logo. Yeah. They change the logo also.
Exactly. And I mean, even last year during COVID, India had like 11 unicorns. So did you also see this coming? Did you see this movement coming in the market, that more and more companies, more and more businesses will move into this impact sector?
To be honest with you, it didn't hit me at first, but after the devastation with the millions of people that have died around the world from COVID, I've seen devastation in many industries of people closing up shop. It's been a very difficult thing. I've been touched by COVID with friends and family around me, and I think the initial reaction as I was getting many calls from people seeking help and advice, this was just a way I said to myself, I see that I need to put time into this category because this is going to be the wave of the future. And the bottom line is that I kind of think of it, as a mentor to entrepreneurs out there. If you are not looking out for the world and you're not looking out for impact and sustainability, you're not doing a service to humanity and to the rest of the world of entrepreneurship. So,
Kevin is with us. Kevin is with us.
And are you also using, for example, I heard that my friends from Rockefellers, they have started this disinvesting, that if they invest in a business and the business is not impactful or sustainable, they take their money out. BlackRock is slowly starting doing the same. The Norwegian Sovereign Fund is doing. So more and more investors are putting this kind of disinvestment as a kind of tool, as a kind of power, pressure that if you don't do your business in a sustainable way, then I'll take away my money. I'll take it out. Are you also using this kind of pressure yet?
Am I doing that yet? Yeah. Or
like saying, if you guys don't act sustainably, then I will disinvest from your business. So like,
I'm not a nasty shark. Okay. There's Mr. Wonderful is Kevin O'Leary on Shark Tank. He gets a little bit brutal right now. Yeah. You know, he's a great investor. So, you know, I'm only saying positive things about Mr. Wonderful. Right. But I oftentimes say to people, do you know why he calls himself Mr. Wonderful? Because nobody else will. He's the only one. He calls himself Wonderful, okay? You know, once I make an investment, I'm in. And, you know, but today, you know, so it oftentimes, yeah, if somebody was, if they had an opportunity that they passed on and they should have taken it, you know, then I might get upset and maybe might pull my money out. But, you know, I'm the kind of investor that likes to invest and give people a little bit of time to make it happen. I don't like to wait 5 years, but, I like to see some good things happening within 12 to 18 months. And if it's not at that point, then I can say, okay, look, you should have done this. You should have had more impact, sustainability, time for me to change my direction here. But the bottom line is I also am, as we go, am able to introduce people to opportunities for them to get into sustainable kinds of in industries along the way. Because, I mean, look, a year ago, the whole world of PPE barely existed.
Yep.
The world of sanitizers and wipes and spraying and cleaners and all this stuff. This has just become a tremendous, I mean, billions and billions of dollars in public companies, et cetera. So people can move quickly. And I think that's what you're seeing in this impact, in this impact category. I love to hear that green is good and that's the way to go. And I think this is what is powerful. And by the way, there's one other thing I'm going to mention about that, because people that are raising money, companies that are raising money, a lot of times, where do you go? You go to friends, you go to family, you go to angels, you go to bankers, hedge funds, et cetera. But there's another thing that people are doing very successfully, and that's going to crowdfunding. So I'm involved with some crowdfunding ventures, and sustainability and impactful businesses are doing very well on crowdfunding because people have to invest and be part of it and tell the story about the sustainability. And so I'm involved with more than a dozen campaigns, and this one of the companies I'm involved with is called republic.co. And if anybody out there, and it's only US investments at this point, well, it's US companies that they will allow to put on the site, but if you Google it, check it out, republic.co, you'll see that there's a lot of sustainable businesses that have been successful.
Kevin, we desperately need you here in Switzerland because we still don't have it here.
We don't have such things, you know. Yeah. We are very conservative here, a little bit slow maybe, you know.
For those that are around the world in other countries, crowdfunding does exist in a lot of markets. Yep.
Yes, crowdfunding does, but equity crowdfunding.
I just read from the audience.
You know what we say? It gives everyone a chance to be a shark, you know, because
exactly.
you can spend $100 on your credit. You can put $100 on your credit card and invest in businesses with equity crowdfunding.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
I just, somebody from the audience just mentioned that apparently, did you know that you have a huge following in India? Were you aware of that?
I don't know how big it is, but I do a lot of work. I've made some investments over there. And
you are. Okay.
Yeah. So, in fact, this is one this company, Celsius, that I have talked about. I'm launching Celsius in India very soon. So for those that are in India, by the way, Ben, where did you find my following in India? I'd love to get more details about that.
I'll send you the links and everything. I just got it from the audience.
Okay, great.
And
go ahead.
Okay, and they're asking, when can they expect Shark Tank in India?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think we're right now we're only running the you know, the only reruns that are available there. I do know we just launched Shark Tank in Morocco, for example, and that's in Arabic. So it is, you know, it's in, you know, dozens of markets. And I don't have the answer for India, but you know, maybe hopefully soon, but I'll check. I'll find out.
Okay, because the unicorns, if you look at how many unicorns are coming out of India, it's amazing. I mean, it's one of the fastest growing economies in the world. Apparently, they're crossing even China in that way.
Yeah.
There is somebody wrote, how is it? What the question is, the Shark Tank new season lorry mentioned about you and infomercial. How is that deal going on?
And who is this now?
I don't know. It's a question from the audience.
Say it again.
So the new Shark Tank new season, Lori mentioned about you and infomercial. How is that deal going on?
Lori Grenier has done a great job. I've been involved in one of the projects that Lori did was called Scrub Daddy, for example. It's a little scrubbing thing that's got some soap in it, and so Lori has done great with infomercials, and so she put it up, and now I have the rights, for example, for Scrub Daddy for Amazon. And believe it or not, I mean, just in the last, I just got a report, we did like almost $5 million on Scrub Daddy on Amazon. I mean, it's just like, it blows me away. But this is because the infomercials help build the brand, and then the sales are happening all over. So this is the business model that I've been involved with for years, the infomercials, the Ascena TV. But it's getting a little tougher because television viewership prior to COVID, TV viewership actually dropped. Okay, now we see lots of, you know, of viewership happening. So this is why sales have started increasing on a lot of the infomercial stuff. So there's been a little bit of a resurgence in infomercials and very positive stuff happening there because more people have been at home watching TV and more people are on the internet, spending time, right?
I have a challenging question to you, Kevin. Just came into my mind.
I don't know.
Yeah. So you have all these TV shows, a lot of people watching you around the world, and the awareness about SDGs, Sustainable Development Goals, and impact is not yet there. So how could we incorporate that into your shows, maybe somehow, that besides selling all these products, we could also raise awareness about impact, that people would change the consciousness slowly? What do you say?
Well, so I think it's a great idea to do that. One thing to understand, because when I first started filming Shark Tank, and I've done 175 segments now. So when I first started filming, I said to the producers, why do you have so many projects that come on Shark Tank that seem a little goofy or don't seem like anybody would really want to invest, okay? And he said, I'll never forget Mark Burnett, who came down and he said, nobody's invested any money. This was like, it was like 11 o'clock in the morning. We'd been filming 8 a.m. And he said, nobody's invested anything today. What's wrong? And we said, Mark, what deal would you have invested your money in? Okay. And he says, what? You got to understand, we need to make good television. Okay. Mm-hmm. So now I'm not the producer of the show, Shark Tank. I was a guest. I was a shark. The producers have, you know, they cut a deal to get distribution on ABC TV, but they can't just, it can't all be about education and where things that we should be doing.
We could choose a project, you know, the project.
They have to entertain, okay?
Yeah.
Could they?
With magical transformation also, you know, impact. Yes. Wow, we solved climate change. Yay. Well, you know, something like that.
This is what I'm going to recommend, though, to the producers. I think if they were to do one show that said, okay, today's episode is about sustainable and impactful businesses. That would be a great idea. And I and the person that asked this question, I 100% agree this should happen. It has to happen at the higher levels on the TV shows, because I can't just show up one day, because when I show up and film, we're just taking the pictures of what they've already put forth, right? They have a brain trust at a higher level. And I think now is the time. And I, you know, so I appreciate the question, and I'm going to put some effort into making some changes in the future. Can't guarantee anything, because again, people that are producing television shows, they have their own styles and systems and networks and whatever, but let's see if we can make some impact on them.
Let's try, you know, act with impact. It's what we say here, you know, act.
Exactly.
And you never know what's going to work, but at least we are trying. So we do what we can do at least.
Yes, exactly.
Thanks for that. So we are looking forward to catch up on this topic. There is another question from the audience here. What do you think about new unicorns? Which country is doing good?
Entrepreneurship.
Okay. Well,
in your opinion,
I think there's when COVID first hit, I looked around and I thought this is going to be devastating for everybody. My bank account in terms of asset value decreased tremendously because I had stocks dropping off a cliff. Now I'll say that then I focused on what are the unicorns out there doing. You know, I've hung out with Richard Branson before and Tony Robbins and some of the big guys out on the market. So I reached out to some of the unicorns and billionaires that I was familiar with and had access to and asked, what are you doing? And I think this is this collaboration, right? Mm-hmm. And so that was very powerful for me to start collaborating with other entrepreneurs that are unicorns. And they, and I mean, even guys like Elon Musk, his net worth exploded during COVID. Okay.
Yep.
So the smartest people have done very well. And now I can tell you that my net worth went way higher now after a year of COVID from where it was before we started. So we started here, it went down, and it's gone up higher than it was long before, you know, before we started COVID even. So I think the key is understanding some of these things that we're talking about here today, focusing on customer acquisition. I mean, this is just one company that
I want to try this drink now, you know.
Yes.
Is it available in Europe somewhere?
We're in Sweden, Germany, various other places around Europe, but we grew from under a billion to billions of dollars during COVID. Okay. And so, and I'm one of the owners of the company. So, you know, yes, my values and equities and net worths and things exploded. And so I think that, you know, now though is the time for all of us, and even in industries like this, to get sustainable for the long haul. And these are things that we're actually talking about at the board level now too.
And looking at it from the investor's point of view, because in our sector, for example, in the sustainability, what we have noticed is that most of the investors like yourself or investors here in Europe, they like to invest in businesses in their own region. So European investors invest in Europe and things like that. It's very much selected. But in our sector, it's more and more in the emerging markets, because that's where the real growth is taking place, whether in India, Malaysia, Indonesia, whatever. But the perception of the investors is still that they will prefer to have invest in a very low-graded German shares than in a share which is increasing its equity value and having a high return, for example, in India or something. So what would you advise to these investors? How to change their perception?
Good question. I mean, I think I understand the question. And, you know, I would go back to the point that I make. I talked about magical transformation in the businesses that that I've invested in, right? And so I think the key here to sustainability and impact investments is the companies need to show what transformations are these companies able to make that provide great benefits to the world and society in an impactful and sustainable way, right? Yeah. So as, in other words, it isn't just, let's just say this is what we're going to do. Let me see the fruits of those efforts.
Yeah.
Let me see, like, there's companies that say, if you buy a product from us, we're going to donate one to somebody in India or in an underprivileged marketplace, right? And yeah. So they're, you know, they're creating sustainability with giving a product away. Now, so let's, you can talk about that, but now let's go see the communities that have been the beneficiary of these free products and services. And maybe there's more water being delivered, or maybe there's more shoes or socks or whatever. So, I mean, I think that this is what it's all about. I mean, you know, we have challenges with various things that are happening to the earth and the warming problems that exist. So, I mean, how can you show that the efforts of your business are creating real change and have real viability? And now when you can have a company that's growing, that is creating real change, people want to be involved in those kind of companies. They want to be shareholders of those companies. Yep. They want to be on the board of those companies, et cetera. And this is what I'm looking for as an investor, are companies that, yeah, I mean, I've built 20 businesses to over $100 million. That's great, but that's the old way. Now I want to build 20 businesses to over $100 million that are sustainable and impactful for the world. And I want to be on those boards, because that is a more powerful way to live your life, for sure.
Exactly. And you also mentioned yourself about the crowdfunding and everything. So more and more investors are now investing also via online.
Yes.
So how would you, how can you convince, and especially an old fashioned or a traditional investor, to invest online?
Well, I mean, I say it this way. So in the old way, when I dealt with investors, we would do a roadshow. So I would go to New York, have 3-4 days of meetings, meet with dozens of investors, hedge funds, et cetera. Then I go to Chicago, then I go to Los Angeles. And when the trip was done, it would take 2 weeks and I'd meet with a couple dozen investors. Today, I could do that online in 1 or 2 days. Okay. Yep. And the reality is this, when I would do these roadshows in person, I could tell if I had a room of 5 people, I could tell that 3 or 4 of them were not, they weren't interested. They're, you know, this is not going to be for them. So the goal is to get 1 or 2 here, 1 or 2 there, you know, a 3-week roadshow. What am I going to end up with? I'm going to get 4 to 5 great investors that want to come in. All right. So, but it took 3 weeks, lots of travel, staying in hotel rooms, being away from my family. What's happening today? It's a different world. You can go onto a Zoom like we're doing right now, and in under an hour, you can get the pitch. And if you're interested, then we can set up something one-on-one in a more direct and meaningful way. So I just believe that investors like, you know, because when you have to go to one of these meetings, you know, in New York City, I mean, you've got to drive into the city. You've got to pay to park. You've got to, it's a whole day to do or a half a day to do a meeting kind of thing. Whereas now you're able to touch more people, more opportunities, and zero in on the people that you want to zero in on. I think it's today, it's dealing with investors online. Like if we were talking to investors right now, the way we are on a specific deal, there's going to be people interested and people that aren't interested, but now we can focus on the ones that are. I love the new way of being able to talk to investors via crowdfunding. It's been very powerful.
But you as an investor from the other side, how people can convince online? Because what we've seen also, you know, some projects, they were struggling, especially at the beginning of COVID, 3 first months, because everyone was saying, we are going back to normal. So first we need to meet. right? But now people are accepting, okay, no meeting. So how to convince, it's for the projects, right? How do they convince an investor online? What they must do a little bit different than offline so the investor would say yes?
Well, I mean, look, and I'm not saying that everything forever is online. At some point, some investors are going to want to meet you. Yeah. And look your eye straight in the eyes.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point.
You're the kind of person they want to invest in. I mean, I'll give you a great example. In India, I got pitched online on a deal, and mm-hmm. it sounded very exciting. And make a long story short, I waited. I have other business in India, so I said, I'll tell you what, I'm not going to write a check right now, but I'm going to be in New Delhi in 60 days. And I want to meet you face to face. We did, squared them up, saw what was going on, saw the team they had assembled. And within 30 days of that meeting, wrote a check and invested in a deal. So the online side, I mean, to give you an example from my side, you know, I told you I get 100 pitches. You know what I ask people to do? You know, I have a formula for pitching. I call it T's, please, and C's. Okay. You tease with an attention getting problem. You please by selling benefits and unique benefits that come from the product or the service. And this isn't just a product, a service, a product, a business. What are the unique aspects of that business? And what are the magical transformations? And are there some great testimonials? And then you seize with an irresistible offer. So when I'll get pitches online and somebody will say, Kevin, I'm going to give you a 2-minute pitch and I'm using your formula, the T's, please, and the C's, and here it is. And so right away they got my attention because they know what I'm looking for. And they say, so here we go. And then when they execute that pitch, I'm like, hey, you know what? They did what I'm looking for. They did it exactly. Yeah. Let's get on the phone and chat now. So, an online pitch is usually taped for me. I watch, mm-hmm. I watch the video. Then I decide whether I want to have an online, you know, a Zoom call. And then the third step would be a face-to-face meeting because I don't invest without ultimately meeting face-to-face with the people.
Exactly.
Right. So I love that kind of strategy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that is basically the tradition. Everybody wants to meet face to face, but with the COVID, the situation, that's one of the negative sides of the COVID, that people can't travel.
Yes. Well, I will tell you, when people want money, they figure out creative ways to do it. I have people that'll drive 12 hours in their car to come sit 6 feet across the table from me with a mask on. Okay.
Yeah.
So, I live in Florida. And Florida never shut down. Mm-hmm. They did have, we had social distancing and there were the bars did close for a while, but restaurants stayed open with 50% capacity and golf still stayed going. So, investors were still able to, you could still fly into Tampa or you could drive into Tampa, Florida and make a pitch to the Sharks still. So I still took a lot of pitches during COVID and still made investments.
Exactly. No, because we had a very interesting project and they were supposed to meet investors in America and they tried everything from flying from Netherlands to England to Central America to America. Try to find how you can sort of find the glitch between the COVID restrictions. But finally, they didn't manage because the situation was changing on day-to-day basis. One airport closes down, one border closes down. it has really become hard.
Mm-hmm. So, unbelievable, yeah. It's been fun being with you guys today.
Thank you very much.
Kevin, it was our pleasure. Thanks a lot. And let's keep in touch. We hope to maybe one day to have you again at our show. And thanks a lot. Thank you very much
for
making time.
Thanks for having me. And love to, if anybody's interested, I'm going to tell you that my new book, I have a free audio version that I can send. If they get back to you, either Ben or Svetlana, I can send an audio to anybody that would like a free audio.
That would be great, actually, Kevin. Let's do that.
So you let us know, and we'll be happy to get those out to anybody.
Oh, because we will then also publish it in our companies and everywhere.
Yes.
So that people can get it. Thank you very, very much, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin. Enjoy your day. Bye.
Thanks. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, that was energetic, right?
Yeah, yeah, he's amazing. It's really, I think we Europeans have a lot to learn from Americans in this way. They have so much bountiful energy that we feel very, very slow compared to them. But thank you very, very much. So,
what do we do next week? What do we do? Tell us.
So next week is it's amazing that time goes so quickly. It just feels like we started a couple of weeks back, but we already crossed 10 weeks. So next week we are going to have a summary session. That will be the summary of all the last 10 weeks. And that's how we close season one. And then from 2nd April, we start with season two. So then we will surprise you and inform you with everything.
Absolutely. So act with impact. And this was With Impact with Ben Edges, with Ben and myself, Svetlana. Bye,
from
everyone.
From Switzerland. Bye-bye.
Hi, it's Sveta and Ben, the world's number one impact investing expert. I have been educating thousands of people on the topic, how can you use finance as a force for good?
And I have been helping hundreds of entrepreneurs all around the world to set up, run, and establish their companies and businesses.
Do you even know what is impact investing? And how can you get engaged in that?
Did you know that in the coming years, we are going to lose 26 trillion of our GDP due to the climate change? But on the other hand, are you also aware of all the opportunities that the sector has to offer?
Are you aware of changing policies and businesses which already impact every little part of your life?
To have the answer to all these questions, come and join us at Swiss Impact with Ben Edges on every Friday afternoon, 3 o'clock Swiss time, starting from 15 January.
We will be interviewing thought leaders, world leaders, policymakers, investors, businesses, which are already engaged in this sector. So see you on Friday.
See you on Friday.